In a constantly changing world, today is as simple as it gets. You're listening to The Leadership Enigma, a podcast to explore, experiment, and power up your leadership to make the difference to your business, your people, and your success. Whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, or corporate executive, each week we dig deep into global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts, and disruptors. Now, here's your host, Adam Pacifico.
So welcome to another episode of The Leadership Enigma. And the title of this week's show is Many Know, Few Do. And I'm extremely excited and delighted that I have Justin Cohen with me on today's show. Now, Justin is the author of six books. He is a global speaker, having spoken in 30 countries. He is a chat show host over in Africa. And in fact, Justin, you'll tell us about this. You're going to be the host of a new show called Single Wives about personal transformation, I believe.
That's it, yeah.
And the reason we've got Justin on this show is really he is a leading authority on human potential, which is a rather wonderful sweet spot for the Leadership Enigma. So, Justin, welcome to the show. Many know, few do. Help us understand what that's all about.
Well, Adam, let me ask you this. And can you lead yourself? Yeah, I mean, the answer kind of seems obvious, right? I mean, you decided to do this podcast with me. You set the time. You gave it to me. We both showed up. We led ourselves here. Yep. There's this sort of sense that we have that we can lead ourselves, right?
But I certainly would hope so.
Yeah, well, right. But then I'm going to ask you another question, which is kind of throw a little bit of a spanner in the works.
Okay.
Have you ever had a New Year's resolution that you never accomplished?
Yes, probably more than one.
Right. Well, me too. And in fact, the research shows that over 80% of New Year's resolutions are not achieved. Now, if you think about that New Year's resolution that you never achieved, was it because you didn't know what to do?
Do you know, I think it's just not following through. Best right. intentions, and then didn't follow up with the best intentions, if I'm being honest.
Exactly, right? And most New Year's resolutions are actually about losing weight. And there isn't really any rocket science here, right? In fact, most of the things that we want to do, the success that we want to achieve, is not rocket science. You want to lose weight, move more, eat less. Yeah? You want to create wealth, cut down your spending, get out of debt, save and invest. You want to stay married, stop trying to be right all the time. You can't be right and be married at the same time.
I'm making a note of that one already, Justin.
I'm glad to hear it. So it seems clear to me that most people know what to do.
Okay.
They just don't do what they know. And if you're not doing what you know, and if you're not doing what you want to do, well, then that's a failure of personal leadership. And I know when we talk about leadership, we think almost invariably about how we lead others. Yeah? But really, it starts with leading ourselves.
Yes.
So I find this intriguing because this was my issue. I knew what to do, but I just wasn't always doing it. And that gap, that knowing-doing gap, that knowing-doing gap is something that I think we need to shine some light on. We need to find a way to bridge that. And it seems to me that what it really comes down to is motivation.
Right.
I mean, think of that New Year's resolution that you never achieved. Had God come out of the heavens and said, Adam, if you do not achieve this New Year's resolution, you will die. Do you think
that's a motivator for sure.
That's a motivator. You would have done it, right? There would have been no question. No, there would be no excuses. No, well, I couldn't, and I had this to do, and I had that. You would have done it. You would have done what you knew, right? And so it seems to me that motivation is the key to leadership. And we're motivated really by one of only two things. We're motivated by pain and pleasure. We're motivated to reduce pain. We're motivated to increase pleasure. And so God coming out of heaven saying, if you don't do this, you're going to die. Well, that's painful, right? And what we know is, in fact, pain is twice as motivating as pleasure. It's not to say that pleasure isn't a great motivator too, but pain is a huge motivator. And so if you're not doing what you need to do, what's probable is that you don't have a big enough why. And that why comes down to the reasons. And the reasons, if you really break them down to their essence, it's about pull and push, pain and pleasure.
Gotcha. So, Justin, you travel the world talking to leaders. Did you find that this is very common, that when you ask those questions, nearly always people are saying, yes, of course, we have great expectations of ourselves. And then you ask the question about New Year's resolutions and everyone says, oh, yes, we will fall foul of that.
Exactly, Adam. And I know that you speak all over the world as well. And it is a wonderful opportunity to conduct research because you've got hundreds, sometimes thousands of people in front of you and you can ask them a question. And that one's a really interesting one because when I ask it, when I say to people, can you lead yourself? Mm-hmm. Almost everybody's hand goes up in the air. Absolutely, I can lead myself. I mean, I led myself to this event right now. Yeah. So there's this intuitive sense that I'm able to move myself to do what I want to do. I am the master of my life. But when I ask that next question, how many of you had a New Year's resolution that you never achieved? Everyone's hand goes up as well.
So when that happens and you do that with an audience and everyone says yes to the first question and actually yes to the second question, they've all failed. Is there a sudden realization that actually they're fooling themselves? They've been kidding themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, now that I think about it, chatting to you, what's going on there? And I think why it's such a powerful sort of two-shot question there is that what it creates is cognitive dissonance.
Tell us more.
Well, cognitive dissonance is actually one of the foundational psychological states necessary for learning. So what is learning? Learning is taking on new information. Yes, that I guess is one kind of learning, but when you really shift your understanding and your perspective, it's usually because something has contradicted what you previously thought to be true.
Okay.
That's what we call cognitive dissonance, where I'm holding one belief and something happens which contradicts that belief. And I now have this, it's not an entirely pleasant sensation because there's a sense of something being wrong, something being out. I've always believed this, but now evidence shows me that what I believe is no longer true. Now, what many people do, by the way, when their beliefs are contradicted, and you'll see this particularly with political beliefs and identity politics,
right,
is they'll just find a way to accommodate it, right? So if you're an ardent Trump supporter, it doesn't really matter what Trump does, you're going to find a way to see it as good.
Right? It's almost like confirmation bias. You just look for the evidence that supports your...
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Exactly.
Right.
So, and that's the danger of confirmation bias, is that we actually don't learn. We don't take on new beliefs and nothing can really shift us and move us. However, sometimes it is so glaringly obvious that there is a contradiction between what I believe and what has just happened, that I actually have to change my belief.
See, I love this, Justin. This does resonate with me. Can you give us an example maybe of one personally for you or one that you see a lot when you're traveling and talking to leaders around the world?
Yeah, I think that's probably the big one. This idea that as a leader, because I talk to a lot of leaders, I talk to a lot of executives,
yep,
I am able to lead. I'm able to lead others and I'm able to lead myself. When that gets contradicted, not always, but sometimes it's humbling. It's right. Humbling to realize that I am not as congruent as I thought I was. And therefore, I need to spend some time on my growth and on my development and not assume that I've got this, you know, that I'm perfect. And I think this is one of the qualities that we see in great leaders is humility. Now, not all, you know, by the way, not all great leaders are humble, but certainly when we look at the research on effective leadership in organizations, it's leaders who are willing to look themselves in the mirror. They don't always get it right. One of the most inspiring things I ever heard was the CEO of Sasol. At that point, it was the biggest industrial company in the Southern Hemisphere since the oil prices gone negative. The point is, he was standing in front of 3,000 of his top leaders, and he said these words. He said, "I don't always live the values of our company. Right. I want you to tell me when I don't." Okay. Now, that was a real act of brilliance for a number of reasons. Number one, if you are the leader, you are somebody's meal ticket. In fact, if you're the top leader, you're everybody's meal ticket. And that is why people are not going to volunteer to tell you when you are not living the values. And this is why leaders tend to be surrounded by cheerleaders. And the fear is that if I speak truth to power, I might have my own power taken away. And so that's why it's so imperative that leaders are very clear that they want that feedback, because they're not just going to get it voluntarily. So that was great, right? Number two, we want an organization of people who are honest, who recognize their shortfalls, because that's what produces the kind of growth and development that's necessary for success. Well, what better way to inculcate that in a culture than by exemplifying it? And when that leader stood up and said, "I don't always live the values of this company," what he was doing is giving permission to everyone in the company to say the same thing, to look at themselves and say, "Hey, where am I not living the values of this company?" Right? Yeah, yeah. And this is where, and Adam, I know that you do a lot of work in culture as well. The culture, yes, we know, is the way we do things around here. Well, guess what the biggest determinant of culture is? The leader. We look to our leader to decide how to behave. Amazingly, we even look to our leader to decide how to feel. You can predict the emotional tone of a group of people by its leader. And that's because, actually, there's a little bit of interesting neuroscience here. It's got to do with the mirror neuron network. You know how when somebody smiles, yes, you almost automatically smile back. And even if you don't smile, the part of the brain that activates smiling will be triggered. So we are way more interdependent than we realize. Our behavior, incredibly, if a close friend becomes obese, you've got a nearly 200% increased chance of becoming obese yourself. On the upside, if a good friend loses a lot of weight, you've got a significantly increased chance of losing weight. Now, that's not even conscious. You're just unconsciously picking up on the behavior and emotions of people around you. Now, what we know is that we mirror the leader above all else. And that's understandable, because we're looking to the leader to decide how to behave. We go, "I want to be in favor of the leader," right? I mean, just from an evolutionary point of view, if I'm going to survive and thrive, I've got to make sure that I'm in favor with people who can confer favors upon me, right? And so I look to the leader and say, "Well, let me just do what he or she is doing, and then I should be okay." Right? And so this is why your greatest leadership tool is your own example.
So Justin, you know, this resonates with me, because you're really talking about a leader who is courageous, vulnerable, shows humility in order to be able to have that dialogue, that two-way dialogue with their people.
Here's the other thing that's very concerning about leadership, Adam. And I don't know if you're familiar with this research, but it's pretty damning. The more power, and leadership is power. I know we talk about servant leadership and it's a wonderful concept and we should really promote it. But the reality is, when you have leadership, you have power. Right. You usually have more money, you have a bigger car, you get to tell people what to do. That is the reality. You take the same person, right? Doesn't matter what strata of society they're in, the same person. Mm-hmm. You get them to drive in a beaten up old car versus a brand new luxury car. Turns out that in the brand new luxury car, they are significantly less likely to follow the rules of the road. They are less polite. And when they're in the cheap car, they are a lot better on the road. Now, this is incredible, right? That's the same person, right? The same person in the expensive car is a worse person than they are in the cheap car. Well, what's going on is that when you have money and power and success and status, you don't have to be as attuned to the people around you. You don't have to be as empathic, because you don't need people as much, right? When you don't have a lot, turns out you are more empathic, because you experience a bit more pain, and so you are more tuned with other people's pain. And so you actually, now, let me say, obviously, very wealthy people are wonderful, empathic people, and they're very poor people who are not very empathic and not very nice. Obviously, right? This is not an absolute. But what the research is showing is that on average, the more money, power, the less empathic we become. We even see less mirror neuron activity the more powerful and wealthy we are. Because think about what the mirrors are. The mirror neurons are connecting with other people's emotions and behavior to say, how should I behave? But if you're really powerful, you don't need to be doing that anymore, right? So you're just not as in tune with people. You're just not as in tune.
So Justin, how does a leader mitigate against that happening? Or what's the antidote for them?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really great question. How do you mitigate here? I think, Adam, the first step is knowing this is the danger.
Right.
I don't believe that most leaders get that. I think that most leaders, I mean, you do research on most leaders, they don't know about this research, right? They don't know. Most leaders are not telling you, oh, I am less empathic now than when I was when I didn't have money. Change what you don't acknowledge. You can't change what you don't acknowledge. So acknowledge this. This is the reality. And once you know that's the reality, then you can start doing something about it. What right. can you start doing about it? Well, quite frankly, you know, when I became aware of this research, I just automatically found myself being a bit more conscious that when I was, you know, driving around in my Range Rover SUV, that I was just, I became more polite just knowing this. It wasn't that I was impolite before. I mean, I don't think I was, and that might be a failure of self-awareness. But I'm more deliberate about letting people go in front of me, right? It's about just pulling back, about, you know, not speeding, not revving the engine, you know, this one of these big loud engines, not being that guy. And then like that CEO from Sasol asking people, saying to them, look, I don't always get it right. Tell me when I don't. Talk to me. Listening. You know, I think, you know, leadership. The model of leadership traditionally was the evangelical leader, right?
Right, yeah.
The man.
The Messiah.
The Messiah, exactly. Stands up on the mountain, arms wide spread, and gives his sermon, right? Follow me, right? And now what we're seeing is this very interesting shift in leader from evangelist to therapist.
Right.
What does the therapist do? The therapist listens. Right? They go in and they say, whoa, where's that person? Where are you? Remember, we started off this podcast with my motivation and self-motivation, right? If I'm going to motivate myself, I need to know my why. You know, what is the vision? What is the purpose? What pulls me forward? And perhaps, yes, also, what is the pain that I'm moving away from? Well, the same applies when we start leading others, right? So the program that I do is called Leadership Inside Out. So we start leading ourselves, and then we apply those same principles to leading others. Now, if it's all about motivation is in the gap between knowing and doing. Well, when it comes to moving others, we need to know what motivates them. And that's why it's so important to listen. And, you know, Colin Powell said this. He said a competent leader sees a platoon of 10 people. He says a great military leader sees 10 individuals, each with their own needs, desires, and aspirations. What do they want? What motivates them? What moves them?
It's the power of the collective, isn't it, Justin?
Absolutely. And the leader then needs to listen to figure out, well, these people, what do they want? What is their why? What propels them forward? And so hence this shift of leader from speaker to listener.
And Justin, this really ties in with another one of my guests, John Amici, who always says leadership is energy expensive. And that's so true here, isn't it? It takes great effort. So what would you say are maybe some of your top tips, if this is even possible, in relation to someone starting to really understand that whilst they may know, they haven't effectively done, they haven't effectively followed through in leading themselves? There's some top tips for a leader of any level to really start to think about this again.
Quite simply, if you're not doing what you know, if you're not doing what you want to do, there's a deficit of motivation. You think you want to do it, but you don't want to do it enough. What it's going to take to get there is greater than I'm willing to do.
So you've always got to take the should and turn it into a must.
You've got to turn it into a must, but it's only going to be a must if you really want it. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to go back to your desire here and say, why do I want this? Yes, I know I said I want to lose 10 kgs. Well, look, most people, most New Year's resolutions around losing weight, and most people don't achieve it. Why? Because it's not compelling enough. So what can we do? And I'd write a list saying, you know, what it is that you want to achieve and then why. Okay, so this is, it's actually a very basic a goal achievement formula that I've created. And it's got four questions. What do you want to achieve? It could be your organizational goal. Doesn't matter what it is. So mm-hmm. This is just four simple questions. What is it? Now, the next question is, oh my gosh, this question is so neglected in goal achievement and it's absolutely critical. Why? Why? We take for granted that it's a good thing to lose weight or get out of debt or have a more peaceful relationship, right? We just take that for granted, but your brain needs you to marshal the evidence. Why? And here's what we want to focus is on pain and pleasure. What do you stand to gain if you achieve this? What do you stand to gain? You can create a vision of this beautiful new life that is going to emerge when you do this thing.
Okay.
And what do you stand to lose if you don't? What
There's your pain and your pleasure, right?
That's it. So it's what we want to avoid and what we want to approach. And these are the big motivators. And again, get really vivid and put their worst case scenario. But that's what you want to do. That's what the brain is really responds to emotion, right? So it's very important that you're not just sort of this cold clinical shopping list thing. You really want to create in very emotive terms, right? What you will stand to lose.
Right.
Don't do this. And then what you'll stand to gain if you do. Okay, so that's a big one in terms of just getting that motivation right and helping you to lead yourself to do what you know.
Okay.
And then Adam, what we're really talking about here is habit creation. And I'm very, very passionate. Habits are really the holy grail of transformation, right? Because as Aristotle said, excellence is not an act, it's a habit. It's when we put ourselves on autopilot. Think about brushing your teeth. Does anybody wake up and say, oh gosh, I really have to brush? No, I'm not going to brush my teeth today. No, it's a schlep. I'm not going to do it.
That's habit again, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. So you're a toothbrushing addict and you just do it on autopilot. And that's where you want all these behaviors to be. Okay. That's where we want our cultural behaviors to be, our personal behaviors to be. We want them to be on autopilot. Now, the way that we do that is, yes, first we need big motivation. Why should I take on a habit? Remember, it's uncomfortable at first. It's not a habit. I have to do it really consciously. That's why, you know, and the research really varies on this, but it's around 30 days of conscious, active, a little bit uncomfortable. Like anything you do, an issue that you don't currently do is going to feel a bit uncomfortable until it becomes a habit.
Okay.
So you've got to then, within those 30 days, put in place a certain prompts help you do this. And just very briefly, what we know really helps is reminders in your diary. So actually saying exactly when you're going to do it, so at what time, preferably get a little beep, 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 go off, the alarm goes off. Two, we know a huge factor is accountability. Right. So if you tell someone, a coach or even a goal buddy.
Yeah, an accountability buddy.
An accountability buddy, you see massive increase. I think it's a 50% increase on follow through. So these are some of the things to get you to the point where it's habits. And the truth is, Adam, at that point, there's no leadership. Once it's a habit, you're no longer leading yourself. You're doing it automatically.
Right.
The initial leadership requires marshaling the motivation, the pain, the pleasure to get you to do this, to follow through. Yes, with discipline and free will for 30 days until a beautiful thing happens, you go into autopilot and you just sit back and it pretty much happens on its own.
And really, the essence of all of this is, you know, we've really got to work at leading self before we really can start to lead others because of that role modeling piece and that congruence piece.
You know, it really goes back to me to this point of the greatest leadership tool is your own example. And I just think too often leaders are focusing on everybody else's behavior. It's all about them. It's all about them, right? Without looking at themselves in the mirror. Am I the kind of person that I want my people to be? Do I want people to be like me? And this truly is the ultimate influence. Our ultimate influence is our behavior. And so if we knew that people were going to be like us. Is there anything that we would change about ourselves?
Okay, so Justin, let's finish off with these three questions. The first one is, what's your hobby at the moment, or your favorite hobby?
Yeah, Adam, I don't have much of a distinction between work and play. And so when I think of hobby, I think of that thing that I like to do in my pastime, which is pretty indistinguishable from what I do for work, which is reading and writing. So I really love research. I guess reading, writing, running. I know you as a conference speaker, you also speak all over the world, and one of the things I quickly realized was that you could speak all over the world and not see much of the world.
That's so true.
Yeah, the inside of a conference center or a hotel room. And that's when I started running. And of course, what's great is that obviously it's great exercise. It's great mental health exercise because you're getting your serotonin boost and reducing the adrenaline, which is the stress hormone. But also you're getting to see the city. You're getting to get out there and take in the fragrances and the sky and the sunshine, if there is any, whatever it is out there. And you actually feel like you've been to the place. So those three are probably my favorites, not just past times, but what I do generally. And in the case of reading and writing, that's for work as well.
Well, that's a nice segue into my second question, Justin, in relation to reading and writing, because it's, what's your favorite word?
My favorite word. I'd have to say that it's a word that I made up.
Right.
And the word is transcender.
Okay.
Transcender comes from the word transcend. As you know, transcend just means to go beyond. And for those of us in the personal development field, I think we're all about going beyond where we are, realizing our potential, is often about going further, right? But the reason why it's transcend and not transcend is because Transcender is the name of my new life and emotional mastery program.
And my last question, Justin, is what would be your best advice to a 21-year-old Justin?
To my 21-year-old self, yep. I probably say, take it easy, mate. You know, it doesn't matter as much as you think it does. Like, enjoy the ride.
Well, I think enjoying the ride is pretty good advice across the board. That's for sure. So, Justin, yeah. We want to say a massive thank you for this episode of the Leadership Enigma, and I hope that you'll come back to us maybe in a couple of months and we can have another conversation and we'll see where the world is at that point.
Yeah, Adam, I've really enjoyed that. It's been great talking to you, and really looking forward to the podcast and listening to all the other great interviews that you're doing.
Justin, many thanks. Take great care.
Thanks, Adam, and to you.
Join us again next week for more essential insights on the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with your host on LinkedIn or via our website, www.pca-global.com. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Thanks for listening.